Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Welcome to Secondary Fermentation, episode number 77. This is Smooth Talking Radio, bringing in another calm, cool-headed beats.
I'm very relaxed. I was at a loss for words because I was in such a catatonic state from your rolling voice.
I don't know why I started talking like that. Maybe because I could just really hear it in my headphones. And for some reason, I just felt like talking low and slow.
Low and slow.
Welcome to WCYT. I can't think of a K-B-T-W. Fake radio stage. 103.789. WZYX AM radio.
I feel like if you have a radio show that comes on at like 11 p.m. or 1 a.m., you have to have that kind of voice.
Yeah. Delilah.
You don't have the same. Delilah. Oh my gosh. I actually heard Delilah the other week. Like, I caught it on the radio.
Hey there, Delilah.
Somebody was calling in to make a request, and he's like, this request is for a woman who's a friend to so many, not just me, but just so many people, and she's changed so many lives. And, well, the request is for you, Delilah. I want you to play a song for yourself. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, man.
Gag me.
Oh, gosh. I've not heard that in a long time. But, yeah, we're here. We're back. Episode number 77. If you couldn't tell, you've got Joe here, and you've also got
Nick as well.
Elsie is tending to the baby, but word on the street is that she'll make a guest appearance, popping in with a pick of the week.
Will she make it in time for the LC pick of the week? Stay tuned next week. I think that's two in a row we've done with Dragon Ball Z references.
Perfect, perfect. But yeah, we're here, we're back. You know, there's some headlines making the headlines. You know,
yeah.
Headlines in the headlines. You know, a brewery that we really enjoyed and we've featured their beer on the podcast several times is closing their doors. You know, I think we may have talked last time, did we?
About the Raleigh location.
The Raleigh location closing, but New Anthem Brewing Company, or is it Beer Project? I can't remember what the full name is. But
I think it's New Anthem Beer Project, but yeah.
Yeah, New Anthem, based out of Wilmington, North Carolina, is closing its doors permanently. A lot of, sad reactions seen across the brewing community on that one. And it's kind of shocking to me, you know, because you think of New Anthem as one of the more successful, you know, one of the breweries that just kind of nails it on every beer they've had. Mm-hmm. Really enjoying, you know, they have super good IPAs and, you know, good hazies and, but also, you know, across the styles, I don't think I've really ever had a New Anthem beer that I've been like, man, this is okay. You know, they're all real good.
Yeah, high quality stuff. Yeah, from the IPAs to even some good Pilsners and Blonde Ales. We've had some good bottles from them too, like some Bombers that are, you know, limited release type beers. And yeah, I mean, they just really, really been a steadfast brewery in this area. I feel like almost every tap room or bottle shop or restaurant or whatever carries.
Yeah.
If they're carrying local beer, they're usually carrying some New Anthem in there. So
yeah, so big news. Sad news. Our last day is actually, as we record this, Sunday, March 17th is the last day for their Greenfield Street location. So within Wilmington, they had two locations, one of them being on Dock Street, which is very close to the like downtown strip area. Actually, it's pretty much on it. It's just like right off. Mm-hmm. And that was a cool spot. Very cool building. It has like a cool, like barrel shaped ceiling, you know, kind of an arch with like some tongue and groove on it, gives it a cool vibe. But then they've got a more modern, larger complex, down on Greenfield Street in Wilmington. So that opened, and you know, I didn't even know they had the Raleigh location. Like we're not in Raleigh a ton for breweries, and I don't really think of New Anthem when I think of that, when I think of,
right,
you know, breweries there, but they have their Raleigh location too. So three locations, all operations ceasing. So I don't know if it's a case of expansion and then COVID or, you know, what happened, but
yeah, there's definitely going to be a loss in the craft beer scene when they're no longer available. So I might have to go and try to scoop some product up while we can. But luckily, you guys stopped by the Dock Street location while you were just in Wilmington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're like, oh, we're in Wilmington. We got to go. So
had no way of knowing.
We didn't know, though, that it was about to close.
Yeah.
It was right about that time was when they had announced the Raleigh location was closing. So we knew something kind of was up, but we thought it was just like, well, maybe they're closing that location because it's not sustainable or whatever. But didn't think the whole thing was going, but here we are.
Sad day for Eastern North Carolina craft beer, but you know, hopefully whatever's next for them, it's a good adventure. Maybe they'll be able to come back in the scene at some point. I'm not really sure what their plans are, so
yeah,
but
yeah,
definitely a dark day.
Dark day. Another news, St. Patrick's Day. A lot of festivities were held yesterday, some local things. There's a block party downtown Greenville. It's kind of cool. A lot of people came out. And then Naughty Dog Brewing Company had its little beer party shindig thing. That was pretty cool. They had some nice tents up. Had some pipers piping and drummers drumming.
Pipers piping.
You know, get your load of green beer.
Yeah. I feel like it's funny that that's just synonymous with St. Patrick's Day in the U.S., like having a dyed beer. It's just like, I mean, the same way that they, where they, is it Chicago where they dye the river green?
Yeah.
It's like, I think we just like oversaturate the holiday with the color green. And it's less about the tradition of
that's green like, stuff,
Irish
day,
heritage,
right?
And St. Patrick. Yeah, that was a good time. Definitely, we had good weather too.
Yeah, we're back. You know, we had mentioned last week or last episode, we talked about, you know, oldish breweries in the world and some of them being monastic breweries and whatnot, but kind of inspired us to do an episode on a topic that's got a lot of good articles and things out there, but we figured we'd, you know, it'd be fun to talk, chat about it a little bit more. And that's Trappist beers and Trappist ales and abbeys and whatnot. Kind of a unique segment of the beer market for sure. And, you know, a lot of history with them, some new ones that pop up every once in a while, but a lot of strict rules. So I guess we probably should just kick it off with what is like a Trappist monk or like what is Trappist? So,
and we're staring at a couple here, right here on the table. Should we dive into one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're staring at a couple of these beers. We've got some lovely Bruscarinos on the table.
Yeah, where'd you get these from? Were these
I can't remember.
Purchased or gifted? I know you've gotten a lot of like kind of quote unquote rare beers or kind of like rare styles from
random ones. I don't even remember where. No, these ones aren't from subscriptions. These ones I actually got off the shelves somewhere. So what Nick is holding in his hand is Trappist Rochefort number 8, and then the Westmalle Double. I think they're both like somewhat readily available. Not like you're not going to see them in the grocery store or anything like that. I think I've just got them from random bottle shops. One of those actually may be from Wegmans, which has usually a pretty good beer selection. I think the Westmalle was from there.
Yeah, I feel like Westmalle is probably the most readily available that I've seen in bottle shops here, like at Jarvis Street or Tapped, or even like, Wegmans. So.
But yeah, so which one are you going to crack first?
Well, let's go ahead and do the Westmalle since we're talking so much about it. If I can get this off with one crack of the bottle opener.
That bottle opener kind of sucks. I feel like it's more like for decorative purposes because it's like this terrible cast iron thing that the edge that lifts the bottle is
so
like just like rubbed off on the first thing. Brilliant. Thank you, sir. This one goes out to Delilah. Brilliant.
So what do we got here? We got a nice dark brown, not like jet black, but like a dark brown that has a little bit of a reddish hint to it.
Yeah.
We're also in some kind of dark in here. Lighting.
So yeah. We've got mood lighting set here.
Yeah, we're really rocking this whole
smooth vibe. Oh, yeah. It's got some reddish hues to it.
Also, definitely looks like there's some particulate matter in there.
It's like the color of rich mahogany.
Yeah, it does kind of look like a some kind of rich wood color. But yeah, leaving a nice bit of foam on top. It's kind of lingering, not leaving too much lace on the glass, though. We'll see how it goes as I drink it down.
I've got some lace actually going when I do. Yeah, aroma's pretty good. The aroma's like, it's got that kind of fruity yeast character you'd expect from a double.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of some malty sweetness in there, too, I think. Hint of alcohol.
On that note, let's see what the ABV is. We're rocking with 7% even, apparently. And these are 11.2-ounce bottles.
Mm.
But, definitely seems like the yeast is kind of the most pronounced character for the aroma. It's producing that kind of like a cherry, just really fruity, estery aroma.
Yeah, dark fruit for sure. So Westmalle, or Westmalle, however you say it, is brewed at the Our Lady of the Secret Heart, Our Lady of the Sacred Heart Abbey in Westmalle. And of course, you know, their beers, as we'll talk about later, carry the authentic Trappist product label.
Yeah, and so they have, we've got the double here, but they also produce a triple and the extra Trappist, so, which is...
It's got two so authentic Trappist product labels on it.
It's got two of the...
Two stamps.
Rhombuses, yeah. Yeah, really, this one's got like a pretty thin mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got a decent bite of carbonation, but not overly spritzy or bubbly. But overall, pretty light-bodied, light mouthfeel. And then I'm getting some more of the malt character in the taste than I was on the nose. So
yeah, and of course, like with a double, hops are not the star of the show. So really minimal hop presence and not a lot of bitterness either.
Yeah. Overall, something that's like really approachable, a little bit higher ABV, but definitely I think a double is a good pairing option because the profile's pretty clean. It's not, I mean, yeah, we mentioned a lot of the yeast character, but I don't think it's producing like a lot of fruity flavor. It's not like strong fruit. It's just like subtly introduced. And so I think that could be a really good pairing option for a lot of different foods.
Yeah.
Similar to like kind of like a wine would be. You know, good with like a cheese board or charcuterie. I think this would be nice for some of those like cheeses, something kind of fatty and creamy and kind of cutting through some of that.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the authentic Trappist product label, but first let's talk about like what is a Trappist, you know,
what is brewery a Trappist?
Or, you know, who are the Trappists, I guess is a real question. Trappists are monks. Their namesake comes from La Trappe Abbey Monastery in France, which actually was built in 1120 as a small chapel. Basically, was there for a long time, and things became a little bit too liberal. So in the 1600s, reform was had, and basically they made these this order of the Cistercians of the Strict Observance. So these monks and nuns as well in this order became known as Trappists, and for the nuns, the Trappistines. But so the Trappists are monks. They kind of follow these strict rules, and one of the rules being that they need to live basically off of the things that they create and basically the off the fruits of their labor pretty much. So that'll come into play when we talk about like availability and things, but pretty much they produce this beer to sustain the abbey and to sustain, you know, their way of life and to make sure they've got something that's keeping them going in business. So in order to be a Trappist product or a Trappist beer, it has to follow some rules. And those are set by the International Trappist Association.
Yeah, and their website kind of details, I think, a lot of the product besides the beer that the Trappists are producing. So if you're ever curious about like what they're making, I mean, there's bread, cheeses, chocolates, they make cleaning products, honeys, oils, all kinds of things that these monasteries are selling. But
some mushrooms as well, too.
What kind of mushrooms are they?
I don't know.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're so self-sustaining and, you know, basically just getting by from the fruits of their labor and the, you know, the products they're using. And, you know, they're of course a not non-for-profit or a not-profit organization or institution. So they're not typically selling things for more than it costs just to kind of keep afloat and mm-hmm. meet their basic needs as far as operating the monastery, you know, acquiring equipment and things to make their products. But they, you know, basically live very, very much without profits. And so in some ways that kind of makes Trappist ales a little bit harder to get your hands on because the production is just not the same as it is for a lot of other breweries where they're trying to increase distribution, increase product.
Yeah.
Monasteries have a very set cap on how much they can produce because they're not supposed to have a lot of excess money from the sales of their beer and their other products.
Yeah, and they're not going to market widely, so...
You've probably never seen a Super Bowl commercial for a Trappist ale.
Yeah, and you probably won't either. But yeah, so like Nick said, a variety of products. It was very interesting, the cleaning products one. Like, I only buy Trappist soap. But
if you wanted to be a purist of Trappist products, you could buy everything from monasteries.
Yeah, very much so. And so basically, Trappist products are certified by the International Trappist Association, and they will give basically like a seal of approval that says, you know, this is an authentic Trappist product. I've seen it in a couple variations, like say that it's trapezoidal. On the website, it's kind of like a hexagon.
Mm-hmm.
In here, and it says authentic Trappist product. And to be labeled with that, the beer has to fit some rules, or the product, it has to be made within the immediate surroundings of the abbey, so has to be made on site. Production has to be carried out under the supervision of monks or nuns. So that's a interesting point, is where they don't necessarily have to be the ones doing it, they just have to be supervising the product being made. And then the profits should be intended for the needs of the monastic community, basically to maintain their way of life and to provide money for charitable works and development projects. So,
yeah, I saw a lot of neat things about how the monasteries were using money from the sale of the Trappist products to not only, you know, meet their needs as far as functioning, but, you know, giving a lot to the community, which is, you know, a really great way to capitalize on good products by not only investing in your own needs, but helping those with any funds that maybe are in excess of their needs. They're not, again, trying to store away all this extra money and try to profit and make a lot of gains. They're trying to get by, but also provide for people in the community. And that's a pretty neat thing that has been going on for many centuries now.
Yeah. Yeah, and breweries that have gotten that label of authentic Trappist product, there's 13 right now listed on the ITA website, and going to butcher some of these names. I'll probably have you cut them in halfway through, Nick. But first one we've got is La Trappe. So that's the one we just talked about as the namesake, kind of where Trappist came from. Chimay, you've probably seen that on shelves. So it's got that blue label. I actually had a bottle not long ago. Rochefort, what we're drinking now, or no, West, what we'll drink next, West Mala is what we're drinking now, West Fleteren,
that's a tough one,
which is, I think, sometimes considered like the best of them all, and it's also the most difficult to get. I'll let you take over after that West Fleteren.
Is that the one where people like literally travel to the abbey and like will wait outside?
Yeah, because like, they won't like announce when they're going to sell it or something. Like, yeah. It's crazy.
They have such a small finite amount of the beer sold, and so like people line up at the monastery just to be in line to get some, which is pretty wild. But
yeah,
rounding out the list of the other the rest of the 13, there's Zundert, and there's Stift Engelzel, Mont de Cat, Cardenia, which is the first Spanish Trappist ale, so that's pretty recent actually. I think that's been in the last few years. Mount Saint Bernard. You've probably heard of this next one, Orval. I think Orval is probably one of the more commonly found ones, kind of like Westmalle. And then Trefontaine. They have three. So they also list on the ITA website, like the Trappist beers that each brewery makes. And so most of them are making one product, one Trappist beer, but there's a few that have multiple, including Trefontaine. They also have a few at Westmalle, which we talked about a little bit already. And then it looks like the other ones all have pretty much just one, except for the Rochefort. They actually have, like this one, we've got the Rochefort 8, but there's, you know, obviously more than, they didn't start at 8. There's at least 8 to 10 different kind of iterations of their Belgian ale. But, you know, for the most part, they're pretty much limited in the, like, portfolio of their products. It's down to one to maybe a few different iteration. So kind of interesting that, you know, they basically have perfected the craft of making this one beer and have made it the same way for centuries, and they use, you know, really high quality ingredients. So no need to really juice up a big portfolio. Again, also because their intention is not to be this conglomerate brewery. It's more the practice of making good quality beer.
Yeah.
Part of the, you know, Trappist code and following all the strict guidelines is in itself very difficult, so I don't think there'd be any real plausible need to make like a 20 different Trappist ales at one brewery.
And they, yeah, and a lot of the stuff I saw, you know, talks about the quality, and pretty much Trappist products are going to be regarded as quality, but part of that is because, you know, it's since they're doing it as part of their order and you know, sustaining themselves and sustaining the Abbey, they're basically like, you know, seeing this as like God's work and really not phoning it in, you know, using high quality ingredients, good processes, and making sure they're making a quality product. Not on this list because it's no longer a Trappist brewery, but there was a brewery in Spencer, Massachusetts that was the Spencer, had Spencer, which is their Trappist ale, but they sadly closed in 2022. And reading a little bit of a article on that, basically reading a little more into it, they said the director for the Abbey said it just was too hard to compete in a market where craft breweries were popping up all over the place. They said, you know, it made a big buzz when we first started, but since they're not coming out with all these crazy products. It did say they made an IPA, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But they said they just couldn't compete because even though it was an authentic Trappist product, it just was, you know, getting lost on the store shelves. And they didn't have a tap room or anything because they would have had to do it, like, right in the middle of the the monastery. People were not like, let's not do that.
It's kind of a shame because that would have been a really cool U.S. destination. I mean, as far as if you want to kind of see how the process works, you can more easily accomplish that going to Massachusetts than flying over to
Europe,
you know, Belgium or Austria or Spain. But also, I feel like while, you know, Trappist ales have their own kind of reputation, Belgian style beers aren't super popular. And so when that's like basically the
what you're making.
You're making a lot of different Belgian styles. Like, they really haven't had the, like, stronghold on the craft beer market that I think other styles have, especially in the United States. So, not a big surprise that maybe it's not the most successful kind of model for a U.S.-based brewery, but nonetheless, would have been really cool if they had been able to kind of flesh that out longer. So, yeah, I think in addition to the 13 Trappist monasteries or, you know, Trappist breweries, there are other members of the ITA that are basically making other products. There's a total of 19 ITA certified monasteries. So just because you don't make the beer, like you may be making Trappist bread, cleaning products, or, you know, other things in that portfolio. So a total of 19 different monasteries have the distinction of the certified Trappist seal. So also kind of interesting that, you know, my first thought when we were reading into this was like, oh, the ITA must be exclusively about the Trappist ales themselves, but definitely not the case. There's another six monasteries that are making product that just haven't gotten to the brew mm-hmm. side of things. So
yeah, and just a, you know, quite a bit of product, and like we said, there's some exclusivity to getting some of them, you know, because they only sell what they need to sell. You know, some of the breweries are a little bit more strict on that than the other ones are. So for example, like the West Fleeteren, makes West Fleeteren 12, and that apparently is super popular, regarded as like one of the best beers in the world, but extremely difficult to get because they're very strict on selling how much they need. I saw one article that said, you know, one year they thought, you know, we've got enough money to donate to charity. The brewery doesn't need any upkeep, and the monastery is looking good, so we can cut back our production and not sell that much this year.
Much to the dismay of people trying to get their hands on it.
Yep. And then I saw another article that was talking about Chimay, and they produce a lot more, but that's because they're in an area where there's not a lot of jobs. And they said that producing the beer and running the brewery is a benefit to the community and kind of some of their charitable work, because it's providing jobs to the community where there are none normally, which I thought was an interesting take on it as well, because they're like using that community need to do it as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And the, West Fleeteren.
It's so hard to say.
Just to put a little bit of scope, you mentioned that being one of the top-rated beers as far as public perception and other metrics people use, like Untappd, and like Brewers Association has a grading scale too. But so in 2012, there was a report from The Independent that one of the West Fleeteren ales was ranked the highest-rated beer in the world that year. And so people like, obviously, it's kind of like becoming a white whale at that point of beer. Like, I've got to get my hands on this beer. And they would, like, travel to the monastery trying to get in line for it. And at that time in 2012, the monks were making 4,750 hectoliters a year, which 475,000 liters of beer still sounds like a lot, but not really when you kind of picture it like, okay, well, if they're selling it in quantities of maybe half a liter, that's just under a million bottles a year. And so, you know, when you have to factor in worldwide production, a million bottles a year is not a ton. And so people that are trying to stock up on those are, you know, hard pressed to get more than one at a time and you have to go to the source essentially to get it. So,
and, compared to, you know, like another brewery like Orval, they did 70,000, so like well over 10 times the production, you know, 15 times the production of it. Just crazy how little there is. So it's kind of cool. Not something that you see all the time, you know, Trappist products and Trappist ales. Like we said, it's not going to be on every single store you go to get some of them more accessible. I think you can get like Chimay at Costco. I've seen it there at the blue, label. And like we said, I bought one of these at Wegmans, but should we crack into the Rochefort?
Oh, yes.
So this is the number 8, you said, right?
This is the number 8, and it is a 9.2% ABV, so a little bit higher step here.
So this, the type of beer for this one is a Belgian strong dark ale. And it surprisingly is a lower gravity version of the number 10. So you can imagine how strong the 10 is. Quite a bit of foam on the pour. aroma's a little similar to the previous one. Dark fruit, sweetness.
Yeah, it seems a little bit more sweet and getting more like some bread character too. So maybe that's the malt kind of showcasing a little bit more presence this time. It smells really nice. It smells less like that dark fruit than the last one for me anyway.
But it's still got a little hint there. But yeah. The malt is there. The bread is there more.
Noticeably a bit fuller of a mouthfeel, which I'm not surprised because of the head that we got from the pour.
The color on this one looks a little lighter too.
Yeah. And it's got
still dark,
a little
though.
More clarity than the last one too. It's not translucent by any means, but it's definitely got some more clarity in the body of the beer. Definitely a lighter kind of a reddish color than the other one being kind of just purely brown.
Purely brown.
But yeah, I'm liking it. For 9.2% beer, it doesn't drink super boozy or heavy.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just kind of like a, it's almost kind of like a fruit bread or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and so if you're familiar at all with any Belgian styles, typically you kind of see things like the Belgian double or a triple, and those are indicative of alcohol content. So the last one being a double, kind of right on range with that 7%. So when you get up into the triple, or there are Belgian quads too that even go a step further. But I mentioned actually earlier that the extra Trappist ale from West Malle. So that's kind of the low end of things. Often it's kind of on par with a lot of your typical ales with that maybe 5-6% ABV. And from there going up to a double, you're kind of encroaching on 7-8%. Then you get into the nines and above when you hit a triple. So definitely can have a little more of a boozy flavor. I've had some Belgian doubles and triples come across a lot stronger. These ones are really smooth, though. They're not really showcasing a lot of alcohol in the taste. You know, the practices of the monastic breweries have been obviously going on for a long time, but with the relatively recent construction or organization of the ITA, we're looking at really not a lot of time that the organized Trappist ales have been in production. You mentioned kind of the recency of that. And so back in 1930, when that kind of started, Orval and West Malle were the first two that kind of commercially released beers. And so I think it's not really a surprise that those two are kind of the most popular, at least in the United States. Like their name has kind of, it's a little more recognizable to most people that have shopped at a bottle shop or even at like, you know, Wegmans or the grocery store. They might carry some of those in there. So kind of interesting that while, you know, monasteries have been making beer for a long time. Like we talked about that in the last episode with the oldest monastic brewery being from like the 1100s or just before the 1100s. And yet it doesn't, it's, you know, not in the ITA because they haven't gone through the process of being certified. And they're, like I said, it's very rigid and very sacred to be a part of the Trappist Association. So.
Yeah. So it was exciting when there was one in the US, but not anymore. But I mean, hey, it didn't last very long. It was like maybe 10 years or not even, I think, for that span.
Yeah, which is crazy. I didn't know they closed. I know I definitely had got a bottle or two from back in the day. I think Jarvis Street used to carry a decent amount of Trappist ale. So, and a lot more attainable when it's something you can distribute domestically.
Yeah. And I'll say one note that we didn't talk about, but is the glassware.
Ooh.
You know, usually each brewery kind of makes its own glassware as well. We're using some Belgian glasses, none of the Trappist ones, but I think the most common example and one of the easiest ones to think about is the Orval glass. Like that chalice is like just so recognizable that you can do that. But pretty much most of them make their own custom glassware that's kind of like a chalice or goblet shape, and the real purpose behind this is actually to maximize the amount of the head in the glass. So they want to have a big fat foamy head on them when serving, which we did with these.
Oh, yeah.
I think
Yeah, and especially again going to Chimay, I think there's sort of like Guinness, there's a kind of a proper way, if you will, to pour a Chimay, to have it kind of like that traditional pouring style, to get just the right amount of head to body, get that ratio right. So even a practice with the pouring in the glassware to kind of again, I equate it to like Guinness, and then there's, I feel like there's other beers too, but yeah, Belgium is so rich in history. I think like people have developed a technique for pouring it just to get the right amount of head. But the glass really helps retain that too. So
technique.
These glasses here work pretty well. I think they're
kind
of a hybrid between that Belgian looking glass, like the Chimay glass, and also just like a tulip. It's just got a different head, or the doesn't have the flared head as much. And actually, just something I recently looked up that I didn't realize. Kind of going back to my comments about the double and triple and the quadruple Belgian ales. What it really comes down to is the amount of malt that they use, basically the source of the fermentable sugar. So double, triple, quad is indicative of an increase in those malts to have more, basically a higher original gravity and more fermentable sugar. So kind of makes sense.
In singles, usually are not traditionally sold. They were more of the beer for the monks to drink.
They're saving all the easy ones for themselves.
This is for us. Hard day's work. We need some good hydration.
That would be pretty cool, though. Like, to be able to just brew beer and taste it, like, in your home, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, they're just the world's oldest homebrewers, essentially.
Pretty much. And then they're like, hey, you want to try my homebrew?
Hey, check this out.
Hey, you want to try my homebrew? Let me sell it real quick.
We should make 4,700 hectoliters of this.
And sell it. Oh, man.
Apparently, they also have, like, I've read so many different articles that mention the quality of the equipment that they're using to brew, and that's an avenue I kind of want to explore some more, and just, you know, tried searching into that and didn't really yield any definitive answers, but, you know, it sounds like they've not only using, like, high-quality ingredients, but they're using, like, high-tech equipment and technology to to produce the beer too. And so, which is funny to me because it seems it seems like contradictory to what I would imagine for like monks living in an abbey, that they're like using cutting edge brewing equipment.
You just feel like it's got this air of being old.
Like they're lighting a fire outside and they're like boiling an old cast iron kettle and
harvesting the barley with like big scythes, the reaper thing. But looking at a picture, so like, you know, doing a little scouting out and scouting around on the Rochefort website, which is like an ancient website, by the way. It's like so old looking. They actually show some of their equipment, and they've got big old copper like mash tuns and the big like style of stuff that's like half set in the floor.
Nice.
And like, yeah, so they've got like these old, theirs definitely looks old school, but like on the ITA's website, like the picture that runs across the banner when you look at the beer page is basically just like, you know, super modern brewery, stainless steel everywhere, all this stuff. So definitely a lot of practices, you know, going in there. But
which one did you like better out of these two, the Westmalle or the Rochefort?
I think I like this one better.
I think so too. Rochefort.
But just a little, I don't know, it's not as sweet, not as heavy. I wonder how the 10 would be of this. Maybe the alcohol cuts it a little bit too. But
yeah. Hopefully we can find some more at a bottle shop or grocery store
near us.
Kind of re-piqued my interest in Trappist ales and just Belgian styles in general. I feel like it's just something you don't always see. And so when I get the opportunity, I'm like, let me have some. And I've had a lot of different Belgian beers, but I feel like as far as like pure identified Trappist ales, I have had far less than I'd like. So hopefully we can kind of seek these out. I mean, kind of foreshadowing what I learned. It's a small thing, but the icon, I never noticed that they actually have an official icon for a beer to be identified as, you know, an authentic Trappist product. So I'll be looking for that if I'm ever unsure. I think now at least I have an idea of what breweries to keep in mind, but
Yeah, so a quick recap, you know, Trappist ales brewed by Trappist monks in a monastery has to be slapped with that authentic Trappist product label, which means it was brewed in the abbey or in the immediate surrounding of the abbey by the monks or under the supervision of them, and they can't sell it for profit sake. They have to sell it to sustain operations, basically. And with that, you get some high-quality beers that are, you know, pretty unique in flavor. I mean, just good quality, like Belgian-focused beers, usually. And with that, before we get into what we learned, we had a little secret Santa's elf coming in a little, you know, a little late this year, but she came and dropped off Elsie's Pick of the Week. People are going to think that I'm saying Elsie, like E-L-S-I-E.
Yeah, Elsie.
Elsie. So we have a beer hidden by the Frost Buddy 2.0.
Whoops, the official Frost Buddy of the Secondary Fermentation Podcast. Not sponsored.
I'll have to look since I got a pour, okay. But
next time it's on me so that you can be the blind taster.
Next time on Dragon Ball
next
Z.
Next time on Secondary Fermentation.
All right, giving this baby a sniff. I'm getting IPA vibes right off the bat.
I'm getting like really juicy, like orange, like citrusy fruit, almost like, yeah, either clementine, orange, something just really, really juicy. Almost like some pineapple, too,
that's
though.
Pretty much the only aroma I'm getting is, like, just juicy fruit.
It's like some pineapple and some orange. Reminds me of breakfast.
Going in with a taste. Similar to the smell, I feel like. Sweet.
Is this orange juice?
I know, right? Yeah, it is kind of, it's like very orangey. Taking a peek at it. I've got some floaters in mine.
Okay. Yeah, mine's pretty clean. Mine was the first pour, though, so.
Yeah.
But it's like a slightly hazy gold.
Yeah, very golden yellow color.
Looks really nice. Leaving a lot of lace on the glass.
Yeah, loose bubble foam.
Yeah, pretty loose. And that last sip, I did get some kind of underlying subtle hop notes kind of erring towards the like vegetal side.
Yeah, and I barely get that. It's funny. I'm really just hit by juice.
Like up front, it's like it just tastes like an acidic orange juice. It has a ton of that acidic citrus quality. Still getting a little bit of that pineapple I was smelling too, but I mean, if you have like a pineapple orange juice cocktail thing, like it's mostly orange with a dusting of pineapple. But
yeah,
it's finishing like kind of bitter. So I don't know. I mean, I just would have
a little finish that's bitter. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know that it's a hazy IPA. So I'm wondering if it's, I don't know. Geez, that's tough.
Based off the flavor, I'd say a NEPA.
Neepa, neepa.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to go with the New England IPA as well. But it's puzzling me.
This is a beer made in North Carolina.
Okay.
A city which is also the name of the brewery. Can you guess it?
Is it from Raleigh Brewing Company? Or
no, but good guess.
Wilmington Brewing Company?
No, but good guess. Is it Charlotte Brewing? No.
Yeah. I'm trying to think other cities that have...
Small city,
ooh. Is it near us?
No.
No.
Similar to Windy Stone.
To Windy Stone? Oh, Blowing Rock. That's a good clue.
Yeah, Blowing Rock.
Wow, it's a 16-ounce can.
Yeah, it's a big can. This is Meadow Mist Hazy IPA.
It is, okay.
It says, go to the mountains.
I feel like I've always seen 12-ounce cans for Blowing Rock, but...
Yeah, I usually don't see the...
Wow. Incredibly juicy IPA, though, just like...
Yeah, very, very juicy. It's got that extreme juice. Pretty refreshing, kind of, if you're, like, looking for a juicy kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And a really interesting follow-up to, like, the two Belgian beers we had before.
A totally complete different. Contrast.
Yeah, we're, in this case, hops are the star. And
yeah, and hops, like, not in the traditional sense either. Like, just give me those juice.
Give me the juice.
Give me the juice. Well.
I like it.
You kind of said what you learned earlier. Yeah.
I also learned that there are more Trappist products than just beer. That was pretty interesting. So,
yeah.
I kind of want to try some. I don't know how easy it is to
get it
obtain, but I will obtain.
I really want some Trappist mushrooms, you know, that's what I was, just to make like a nice, you know, burgundy mushrooms, but I only use Trappist mushrooms. You know, some bread. Bread sounds great right now, actually.
Make sure you get some olive oil from Trefontaine to go with that Trappist bread.
Yeah, and that's what I think that's my big, you know, fact of the day for me is that they make so many different products under the Trappist banner, you know, in the authentic Trappist product banner, including wine and like just a whole variety of things. so very cool. I'll have to keep an eye out to see if I see any other ones, mm-hmm. you know, just out in the world. But they make a very bootleg-looking liqueur. It's like, it looks like a screw cap, like flask bottle type thing. You're like, interesting.
Yeah, definitely check out their website if you're curious about what products are available. I mean, we've listed off almost all of them, but yeah, I think it would be kind of an interesting little project just to try, you know, I wouldn't say we could outfit our entire homes with Trappist products only because that would be difficult, but you know, like try to just get some of the different Trappist like authentic products, and you know, it's just like it's its own little community within our world that exists for a very like explicit purpose, and it seems like, you know, they do a lot of good with their resources and you know, they're good in the communities in which they reside. They're pretty impactful too, so
yeah,
I feel like supporting something like that, that'd be a good initiative, is to buy more Trappist products.
Yeah,
I guess we said to drink more Trappist ales.
Perfect, sounds great to me. And on that note, thanks for listening. Check us out on our socials, Instagram at Secondary Fermentation. Hit us up with an email at Gmail, eastcarolinabeer@gmail.com, Facebook East Carolina Beer and Brewing, and we will see you in episode number 78. Cheers.
Cheers.